the United States recognizes that China claims that Taiwan belongs to it.
Is it Trump versus China, or will the relationship take a new turn? It's Tuesday, January 17th, and this is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You're also a part of the program. Log on now to our VOA Asia Facebook page. Also ahead, reporting in Vietnam, a VOA exclusive about a blogger and his father. The Philippines gets more attention. Chinese march against ivory trading. A big bird for the new year. All today on VOA Asia. China state media blasted President-elect Donald Trump after he told the Wall Street Journal on Friday the One China policy was negotiable. The China Daily said Monday that Mr. Trump is reinforcing the impression he intends to use Taiwan as a bargaining chip in relations with Beijing. It warned the result would be a period of fierce, damaging interactions, as Beijing will have no choice but to take the gloves off. The Global Times on Sunday dismissed Mr. Trump as a rookie who will meet strong countermeasures if he impairs the One China principle. It said the mainland will be prompted to speed up Taiwan reunification as a result of, quote, this despicable strategy. Taiwan expert Bruce Jacobs of Australia's Monash University tells VOA's Victor Beatty the Chinese reaction is what one might have expected.
I think he's right in saying the One China policy should be discussed because it's based on false history. But there's also a couple of other things which are false about it, such as saying the United States recognizes that Taiwan is part of China. That's not true. The United States recognizes that China claims that Taiwan belongs to it. So in that aspect, I think what Trump has done is raised an important issue that needs to be reconsidered. But for him to say that Taiwan should be a bargaining chip in some trade negotiations between China and Taiwan, I think is completely wrong and illegitimate. Taiwan is a separate nation. It's a middle-sized nation, and it should not become a bargaining chip. We have 23 million people who have democratized and live with human rights and democratization, and there certainly shouldn't be traded off for some supposed trade advantages that the United States might gain with China.
Well, the English-language China Daily ran an editorial Monday accusing Mr. Trump of playing with fire.
There are a number of people in the United States as well who think that Trump may be playing with fire. As I said, I think these issues are important to raise again because they're based on false history. The agreements that were reached with China were when Chiang Kai-shek and Jiang Zemin ruled Taiwan, and they claimed that Taiwan was part of China. In fact, neither the communists nor the nationalists claimed Taiwan as part of China until 1942. It's a colonial perspective. And I think that agreements that were raised when the Chiang Kai-shek and Chiang Zemin dictatorship were on, and when those dictatorships claimed the same thing as China, I don't think that should be relevant to the people of Taiwan today, who have democratized and now form their own government.
China's foreign ministry over the weekend said the One China policy is non-negotiable.
Well, you'd expect them to say that. One could argue that's a negotiating term. It depends on how the Trump government decides to move forward. The arguments that the Chinese would use are that the breaking of relations with Taiwan was part of the deal that was done so the United States could establish relations with China. But in fact, it wasn't quite so clear-cut. And as I've said, Taiwan is now a democratic nation, which has never really been ruled by China, has never been ruled by the People's Republic of China.
Bruce Jacobs said mainland China today is nationalistic and pushing hard against Taiwan and in the South China Sea, which adds to global tensions and gives the Chinese military leverage to push for ever higher defense budgets. These are among the top Asia stories currently trending on VOAnews.com. THAAD is becoming a South Korean election issue. One China principle not negotiable, China tells Trump. China raising threat level against Taiwan, but sparing drastic actions. Myanmar Muslims hope UN envoy's visit will bring change. Upbeat outlook for ASEAN tourism growth. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. If you're online posting messages and thoughts on social media in some parts of the world, it can be a dangerous activity should authorities find some objection to your content. A prominent blogger in Vietnam, Pham Ky Ung, is being watched by authorities after his father was detained and questioned about an article for VOA detailing alleged corruption involving a retired police official and a recently imprisoned CEO of a bank. An Vu stops by VOA Asia to tell us more.
Journalist Pham Ky Ung is one of the very well-known freelance journalists in Vietnam, and he has written so many articles, expressed his voice about freedom of speech and freedom of expression. And that's something that the government has a very tight control on. Last week, his father was invited unofficially to the Communist Party in Ho Chi Minh City. He mentioned that his family's belief the investigation by the party committee is very rude. It is patronizing because they just make the investigation by the phone. Usually they do that by letter.
Oh, okay. So this is a little unusual.
Yeah, the unusual investigation. He said that during the meeting with the father, there were so many party committees leaders who are from the Internal Affairs Commission, from the Commission for Propaganda and Education, and also officers from the Office of the Party Committee. So a lot of them. So after the father came back and he sent out an open letter to the party committee and request to conduct a dialogue face-to-face with them. But I don't think the open letter will be responded.
Okay.
During the meeting with the party committee, they focus on his articles that he wrote for VOA's Vietnamese, and they focus on the name of the party, the former party chief. His name is Lê Thanh Hải, who had a connection with the bankers. During the meeting, his father also heard some threats about the government have enough evidence to charge Mr. Yung with the Illegal Journalists Association.
This article was back in December, correct?
Journalist Pham Ky Ung, the article he wrote in December.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that was on the VOAnews.com website?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. And so people in Vietnam could actually see this and read it?
Not all of them.
Not
because
all.
The government, you know, they have the restriction on visiting these websites, including VOA.
Are there other ways that residents in Vietnam could see it?
They can visit the Facebook website of Vietnamese service.
In addition to the threats that were made, the government also wants to block his articles, correct?
He told me that the government is not happy with the article that he has written, and they will do their best to stop him from writing any articles in the future, especially any article about the former party chief.
At the moment, he is free, right?
Mr. Yung is a free man. He has not been charged anything. But whenever he go out of his house, the people will follow, especially if he had a meeting or had an appointment with someone. There is someone who follow him.
So he's right being away. Monitored, yes, very closely.
That's right.
So I guess the implication is if he were to write something that the government did not approve of, then he might be arrested at some point in the future.
Absolutely.
Well, Vu, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Yeah, my
you.
Pleasure.
Happening now in Asia, South Korea's special prosecutor is seeking an arrest warrant for Samsung chief Lee Jae-yong. The prosecutor's office is accusing Lee of paying over $36 million in bribes to Choi Soon-sil, the central figure in the political scandal that led to President Park's impeachment. Stay up to date with Asia Minute with VOA Asia's Steve Miller. This is VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us today on VOA Asia. Tokyo is trying to keep up. At least that's what we hear from political and regional analysts. Japan sees growing Chinese influence with the Philippines, and that's why Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is visiting the geopolitically strategic South Asian country this week. Abe is seeking to ensure steady flows of aid and investment, as the Philippines is a growing focal point amid disputes in the South China Sea. Abe traveled Thursday and Friday to Manila and Davao, the second-largest Philippine city, and the hometown of President Rodrigo Duterte. He is the first head of state to visit Duterte since the Philippine president took office on June 30th. Duterte is seeking stronger ties with Japan as well as China, and he's hoping to form a multi-country foreign policy with declining reliance on the United States. For Japan, stronger relations will help keep China at arm's length, which has distrusted Tokyo since World War II. Tokyo and Beijing also dispute sovereignty over parts of the East China Sea. Herman Kraft is a political scientist at University of the Philippines, Diliman.
From a geopolitical standpoint, I think the interesting thing about the visit of Japan has to do more with, at least from the Philippine standpoint, this is all part of the independent foreign policy thrust that the Duterte administration has been talking about.
Japan, the Philippines, and the United States have been loosely allied since the Cold War in checking China's expansion. But the sometimes crudely spoken 72-year-old Philippine leader has threatened to scrap military alliances as he distances his country from Washington, which he says has too much influence. Duterte visited China in October, and he won a pledge of $24 billion in aid and investment from Beijing, agreeing to shelve disputes over control of the sea between them. Japan then offered $1.8 billion in aid that month as Duterte visited Tokyo. A Japanese conglomerate, Marubeni Corporation, said it would spend $17.2 billion to improve Philippine highways, electrical power, and mass transit. Japan was also the largest source of Philippine direct foreign investment in 2015, with a total of $18 billion. That amount covered automotive factories, farming projects in remote areas, and tourism facilities. And those investments give Japan a good name among Filipinos who often worry about China because of the maritime dispute. Georgiana Hernandez is spokeswoman for Philippine Vice President Lenny Robredo.
In the past years, Japan has really provided a huge amount of aid to the country in terms of poverty reduction, social protection, and also in terms of infrastructure that leads to more economic opportunities in the rural area. So we are hopeful that this visit will move that forward.
Abe and Duterte discussed maritime security this week as well. The Philippines has looked in the past to Japan for help, especially as China expands its military presence in the contested sea, sometimes sending vessels into waters that Manila claims. Other countries, such as Indonesia and Vietnam, have also reached out to the Philippines at the same time as China, Japan, and the United States, according to Rahul Bajoria, regional economist with Barclays in Singapore.
It's not unprecedented in the sense that you would find examples in places like Southeast Asia. Singapore, to an extent, India have had pretty decent success in terms of being able to attract investment from even contradictory sources. And so it really depends on how the government navigates this whole thing.
Unlike the United States, China and Japan avoid criticizing Duterte's suspected 6,000 extrajudicial killings in a crackdown on illegal drugs. Abe instead pledged this week to help the effort through programs to treat drug users. Duterte said he welcomed the help. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia, Cambodia has informed the United States that it is canceling an annual joint military exercise this year, even though planning for the event had already begun. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia continues. Hundreds of Chinese expatriates living and working in the East African nation of Tanzania gathered recently in the streets of the capital, Dar es Salaam, to march in support of elephants. The event was organized by the Chinese embassy, and it follows Beijing's recent announcement of a complete ban on all ivory trade by the end of 2017. In Dar es Salaam for VOA, Willie Lowry takes us along for the event.
They braved blistering heat in Dar es Salaam to support Tanzania's elephants. Led by the Chinese ambassador to Tanzania, the crowd's message was simple.
I want more people know the animal, the wildlife, are the best friend of human beings.
Poaching has devastated Tanzania's elephant population. A recent survey suggests it has decreased from 109,000 animals in 2009 to just 43,000 in 2014. Demand for ivory in China has played a significant role in the poaching. Many Tanzanians, including celebrities like singer Ben Pohl, came out to show their support.
That's a success because, according to the records, the business of ivory is very high in China, in Asia. So if they support the movement against poaching, that's a plus. Yeah, that's a very positive move.
Last month, the Chinese government announced it would ban ivory trade by the end of 2017. It has been heralded a huge win for elephants by conservationists like Chinese investigative journalist Hong Xiang Huang, a march organizer.
Many people in China and many people in the world have been waiting for that ban. I didn't know it would just come so quick, so sudden. So I was very happy. I remember that was during the Christmas. It was like the best Christmas gift for me and many, many of my friends who have been fighting for this as well.
The head of Tanzania's elite anti-poaching unit, Elisifa Ngawi, says the ban could be a turning point.
For those who facilitate and support killers of elephants in the bush will now get a message that, oh, the market is gone. So why go for killing an elephant?
While the ban is an important step in protecting elephants in Tanzania, there's still work to be done.
We have many issues on the transit country in Southeast Asia and European countries as well. And in Asia, more demand reduction still need to be done. And even if it's now okay for elephants, what about pangolins, rhinos? There's still many other species that need to be protected.
Huang and the Chinese embassy hope to make the march an annual event toward protecting Africa's wildlife. Willie Lowry for VOA News, Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
And stop by the VOA Asia Facebook page to see Willie's story and essentially take a virtual march with the Chinese in Africa. Developing at this hour in Asia, the Philippines acknowledged it issued a quiet protest to China over the installation of weapons on islands it created in the South China Sea. The Philippines says it did not want to take aggressive, provocative action, but says it is engaging with China over the dispute. VOA Asia keeps you informed all day on Facebook at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, what wakes up early in the morning, makes a lot of noise, and tends to wake up people, or for some, disturb them from a calm, quiet rest? Yes, a rooster may be the appropriate answer. And now, in honor of the Chinese Lunar New Year of the rooster, a factory in eastern China is producing a giant inflatable version of the bird, which bears a close resemblance to U.S. President-elect Donald Trump. As these giant roosters are being inflated, managers at the plant say they're struggling to keep up with demand for the roosters, which range in size from 2 to 20 meters in height. The managers insist any resemblance to Trump was not intentional, but would not say what inspired the design. Media reports, however, have cited the inflatable's strong resemblance to a statue which appeared in front of a shopping mall in northern Shanxi province in December. That statue was designed by Seattle-based graphic artist Casey Latiolis, who admits the president-elect may have influenced his design.
I can definitely say that Mr. Trump has a lot of similarities in that he likes to tweet. So right there, you got a bird. And he also likes to tweet at or around sunrise. And if you take away the fact that roosters are kind of loud and are self-absorbed, then I think you can start drawing similarities that way.
Latiola said he was commissioned by Beijing Reliance Commercial Land Company in November of last year to produce something rooster-like. The factory in Jiaxing City in Zhejiang Province has already produced 30 of the distinct inflatables, and they still have plenty of orders to fill before the Lunar New Year, which begins on January 28th. The inflatables can be ordered online at prices starting at $376 US for a large inflatable rooster that may or may not look like Donald Trump. Perhaps a story to crow about. You can see it on our Facebook page at VOA Asia. You have been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to follow us all day long online. Follow us as well at voanews.com. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Dave Magnus, managing editor Diane Gao. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Thank you so much for spending time with us. Have a great day. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On the third Monday of each January, Americans honor the memory of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Dr. King, a Baptist minister from the southern state of Alabama, was a leader in the U.S. civil rights movement, advocating social change through nonviolent means. On January 15th, he would have celebrated his 88th birthday. Believing that change does not roll in on the wheels of inevitability, but comes through continuous struggle, Dr. King organized and participated in mass action boycotts, sit-ins, peaceful marches, and other nonviolent acts of civil disobedience. Dr. King once stated that an individual who breaks a law that conscience tells him is unjust and who willingly accepts the penalty of imprisonment in order to arouse the conscience of the community over its injustice is in reality expressing the highest respect for the law. And so activists sometimes deliberately, but peacefully and respectfully, broke laws aimed at segregating the white citizenry from the non-white, thus hoping to bring attention to the inherent unfairness of such legislation. Thus, when a black seamstress named Rosa Parks broke the law in Montgomery, Alabama, by refusing to give up her seat on a bus to a white passenger and subsequently was jailed for her transgression, her plight generated national attention and increasing sympathy for her cause across the country. Dr. King was 39 years old when he died by an assassin's bullet on April 4, 1968, but his legacy lives on. In the fullness of time, segregationist laws were repealed. Discrimination is a legally punishable and punished offense. And even as we celebrate Martin Luther King Jr.'s life and enormous contribution to society, Barack Obama, the first ever African-American U.S. president, is just finishing his second term in office. I never thought in my lifetime that I would see one of us aspiring to the head of our nation, said Martin Luther King Jr.'s eldest sister, Dr. Christine King Ferris. Mr. Obama leading us toward the presidency is like the promised land for us. Dr. King's life is well summed up in his own words. The quality, not the longevity of one's life, is what is important.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.